Welcome to Alaska Edition, a weekly public affairs program produced by Alaska Public Media in the studios of KAKM. The host and moderator for Alaska Edition is Lori Townsend.
Hello, thanks for joining us today. We're going to take a trip sort of around the state, starting in southeast and visit the Mat-Su Valley and then up to northwest Alaska and look at some of the interesting races and voter concerns as we get closer to November 4th. Joining me in the studio is Ellen Lockyer. Ellen is the Mat-Su and other rural areas of South Central Alaska reporter for KSKA and Alaska Public Media. Thanks, Ellen, for being here.
Thank you.
Also in the studio is Matthew Smith. We're fortunate that Matthew is here covering issues at AFN. So Matthew joins us from KNOM in Nome. Matthew's the news director up there. Hi, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me on.
And on a video connection is Ed Schoenfeld. Ed is the Coast Alaska news director in Southeast Alaska. Ed, thanks for joining us.
Happy to be here.
I know that you're in Sitka. Normally you're in Juneau, but you're in Sitka filling in for the KCAW staff. So thank you for making time for us today. Ed, let's start with you. We'll move up the state then to the Mat-Su, but let's talk about the legislative area races in your area, Ed. Give us a brief rundown of the interesting matchups. You've got one race with no incumbent.
That's right, Lori. The Southern Southeast District, House District 36, has been represented by Peggy Wilson from Wrangell. She's not running for re-election. She was in the legislature for quite a while, and she decided not to run, to retire. So it's sort of an open race. There was a somewhat crowded Republican primary, and Sherry Klein, who is has been an aide to Peggy Wilson, won that. She lives in Ketchikan. And the candidate she's facing, there's no Democrat in the race, the candidate she's facing is Dan Ortiz, who's also Ketchikan, and he's running as an independent. Like a lot of the other Southeast races, the candidates agree on some basic issues, economic development, supporting the state ferry system, which faces financial challenges and an aging fleet. But they differ on some larger issues like Medicaid expansion. It's sort of a classic Democratic-Republican lineup there. Ortiz says, sure, use the federal money to cover the lower-income Alaskans by expanding Medicaid. Klein says it's a bad idea and ties it to her opposition to the Affordable Care Act, AKA Obamacare.
And Ed, the representative for the Sitka region, young Jonathan Christ Tompkins, he's up for re-election. He just had one of his pieces of legislation signed yesterday by Governor Parnell, the Native Languages Bill. Tell us a bit about that, and then what are his prospects looking like in this election campaign?
Well, it's going to be an interesting election. I mean, the Native Languages Bill was seen by some as symbolic and others as the start of something that could really help the many language revitalization efforts that are going on around in the state. Jonathan's district, which is House District 35, includes a number of Southeast Alaska villages, Angoon, Huna, a number of others. And he, when he ran for election the first time 2 years ago, he went door to door and really got to know a lot of people in those villages, pretty popular. He's a young guy, as we mentioned. He's 25. He ran when he was 23. He was seen as a bit of a kind of a, you know, brilliant young guy who a lot of people think didn't have a chance, and he did. He beat a longtime incumbent, Bill, in the last election. Anyway, this time, he's been in the legislature for 2 years. He's up against, he's being challenged by Republican Stephen Samuelson from Petersburg. And a lot of the ways they're approaching things, you know, are classic Democratic-Republican lineups. But Samuelson's taken after Christ Tompkins, saying he's too young and inexperienced. Samuelson is in his late 30s, so he hasn't been around for, you know, like the 60 or 70-year-olds. But he has commercial fish. He's worked in his family's retail business. He's done some tourism work. And he says he just has more experience. Christ Tompkins says, you know, legislators don't have to have done everything to be successful. They have to be knowledgeable. They have to understand what the issues are, know who to talk to. And as examples, he says he's worked with Republicans on a couple legislative efforts, a couple of his plans for pursuing this year seem to be fairly nonpartisan, like an effort to get more commercial fishing licenses back into Southeast hands. A lot of them are now down south, and there's a East Coast model he wants to see if we can try out in Alaska.
All right, thanks, Ed, for that race roundup. We'll come back to you in a bit and find out what voters are concerned about in your region. But let's move to the Mat-Su Valley now and talk with Ellen. Ellen, you've got some interesting races to watch. One of them involves a longtime House member who wants to be a senator in the new district. Tell us about Senate F.
That's Senate F, newly created with the last redistricting plan only last year. And Bill Stoltz, who has been in the House a dozen years at least, and a staffer for many years before that. And he's been on the House Finance Committee almost all of his years in the House. He has announced his bid for the new Senate F seat way back in the summer, back in Palmer. And he's being challenged now by Democrat Pat Chesbrough. She also has a large name recognition. Many of our elections are going to be decided by that. Chesbrough has been an educator for a quarter century. She's been a Palmer teacher, a school principal. She's served as school district superintendent for the Mat-Su Borough, taught at UAA. And she's been challenging Stoltz, and obviously education is one of the issues. Stoltz is in favor of vouchers. Chesbrough has other plans. Chesbrough feels that there's not enough money spent on schools in this state. So that'll be a very interesting race to watch. Senate E will also be, I think, interesting, to keep using that word. The incumbent, Mike Dunleavy, a Republican, now his Senate district has also been moved to the east and north as a result of the latest redistricting plan. Warren Kehoe, he is a former Mat-Su assemblyman. He stepped up to, as an independent, he says he is not going to affiliate himself with any of the larger parties. He is representing, I think, newer people like moving into the valley. He's from a very small town, Chickaloon. Dunleavy is from Wasilla. And I think that will be, I think that might be a potboiler.
Mm-hmm. Are there other matchups that are of particular interest, or do you think those are the two standouts?
Oh, there's more. House 7, incumbent Republican Lynn Gaddis, and she's a Wasillan. She's been in the legislature now for one term. And former Wasilla mayor, Vern Ruprecht, is running also as an independent. He's from Wasilla too. He just stepped down from that. The new mayor, Bert Cottle, has taken over. And those two may give each other a run for the money. Ruprecht has seriously declared that he has reduced Wasilla's budget by 19%. The Wasilla City has money in the bank under his guidance. And Lynn Gaddis, I think, has proven herself as an effective legislator in a lot of issues that go further out, agriculture issues, that kind of thing.
All right, and Matthew Smith, thanks so much for being here all the way from Nome. And on the Seward Peninsula in that area, northwest Alaska, tell us about House District 39, Neil Foster's race.
I shouldn't
call it his race, but he's in that race.
I hear Ellen and Ed talking about some really interesting races, and it is a very different feel to election season out in around Nome, the Norton Sound Bering Strait area. We have a lot of people who won primaries unopposed or did win the primary and are now running unopposed. And I can't speak specifically, I guess, to the folks on the North Slope or the YK Delta, but definitely in the Norton Sound area around Nome, Neil Foster, House District 39, running unopposed, won his primary unopposed. And on the Senate side, Donnie Olson, running for re-election, won his primary unopposed and is running unopposed as well. So. Not as much excitement there, I suppose.
Not many fireworks in mm-hmm. this year's election cycle for Northwest. All right, well, we'll come back and talk about some of the other things that may be eliciting a little bit more heat over voter issues. But, Ed, I want to circle back to you in Southeast now. Voters in your area are weighing in on the idea that's being called the Juneau Access Road. This is a more than $570 million project. It would run, the road would run about 50 miles out of Juneau to a new ferry terminal at the Katsahine River. It's expected to cost about $20 million annually to maintain this road. What are voters saying about this project?
Well, they're saying a lot. There are a lot of very strong feelings, and this has been the case ever since the issue came up, and that's been a long time. Building the road is criticized by a lot of people who feel like it's unnecessary. It'll be expensive to maintain. It'll be very expensive to build, and it is also just something that won't actually connect Juneau by road to the rest of the state, or to the mainland road system at least. The people who support it point to economic development opportunities, say it will ease the pressure on the ferry system and allow that to better serve other parts of Southeast. There will be new ferries on this if it's built. And they also say it will make the capital more accessible, which legislators in Juneau always feel is very important, given that from time to time there are efforts to move the capital out of Juneau. In terms of who's for and against it in the race, all three Republicans running in Juneau, there's two House seats and one Senate seat in Juneau, and also included in there are Haines and Skagway, which would be affected by this. Anyway, all three Republicans are for the road. Democratic Senator Dennis Egan, who's an incumbent, is also pro-road, although will raise a few more concerns. The two Democrats running for the House, Sam Keto, who's an incumbent, and George McGowan, who's a challenger, are either critical or outright opposed to the road. So that's a factor. It's in this part of the state, I've heard people say it's almost sort of like the abortion issue. Some people will vote just based on the position on the road because they feel so strongly about it.
And Ed, very quickly, give us an idea of the shift in demographics that is affecting the power in Southeast Alaska and the legislative seats there.
Sure. And this is something that kicked in with the last redistricting effort in the last elections, but it continues, and it's sort of something people here are getting used to. Southeast Alaska used to have 8 legislative districts. One was a Senate district. It shared with rural parts of Interior and some parts of Western Alaska. Now it has 6. The rural districts basically got combined with larger urban centers. There's been a loss of power from some of those rural communities, and Southeast Alaska's 2 native lawmakers, Clinkett's Bill Thomas of Haines and Albert Kukesh of Angoon, both lost in that last election. The other thing that's happened there is that beyond losing basic voting strength, going from 8 to 6 lawmakers, the power, the coalitions that changed in the last election, going from the Senate bipartisan majority to a largely Republican-run majority and conservative Republican-run majority, Bert Stedman, who's a Sitka Republican, but often is at odds with the governor and sometimes the statewide party, lost a very powerful Senate Finance Committee co-chairmanship and was shifted off to a much less influential committee. And also Bill Thomas was on the House Finance Committee. He lost, and so he could have been co-chair, but he didn't win. And Juneau's Kathy Munoz, incumbent Republican, is on the House Finance Committee, which writes the operating budget and influences the capital budget. She's there, but she just had her first term there, so it's unclear how much power she wields. She could be a co-chairperson this year. I'm not sure. There's rumors of that.
Okay, thanks, Ed, for that. And Ellen, let's head back to the Mat-Su again. There is a hydro dam proposal in the Mat-Su, the Susitna-Watana hydro dam. More than 700-foot tall structure would be built. What are voters saying about this massive project?
Well, it's come up in almost every election discussion I've had, especially for voters of the district, which would include the dam. Now, it's got its supporters who say it will provide power for the rail belt for the next 100 years. However, detractors say, you know, in a climate of state budget deficit, the cost is over $5 billion. There's already several million dollars of state money into it for studies, that kind of thing. And I think there's a lot of concern from some of the candidates anyway that the dam, even if it does provide power for the rail belt, what about the tiny rural communities further west to the interior, especially western Alaska? What will it do for them? So why should the state spend so much money on a project that could only benefit one area? So that's a big controversy among other mega projects all seem to be slated for the Matanuska-Susitna area.
Coal is permits and development is another big issue in the Mat-Su Valley. It's not a new issue. Coal mining has been out there for a long time, but does it seem as if this controversy is kind of reflects a changing demographic in the valley?
Mm-hmm. A new mentality moving in now. Coal, yes, has been part of the history of Sutton, Chicoloon, Palmer. In fact, the Wishbone Hill mine was just permitted by the state only a week or so ago, and that's been quite controversial for years. It's a change in perhaps, like you said, the demographic. 100 years ago, it was pick and shovel mining. There were a few people living in the area, and it did provide good paying jobs. And people say, yes, mining will provide good paying jobs. But now the people moving in are more suburban. They want a quiet rural place, a place to raise their kids in the country, and they definitely do not want a coal mine down the road. So that is, again, a big issue that's been with us for many years and is heating up again.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for that. Matthew, a big concern in your area is the need for an Arctic port. So we have a rapidly changing northern climate. And what do locals in Nome, Brevik, Mission, Teller, in that area that would probably be most affected by a port, what are they saying? What do they want there?
Yeah, well, the Army Corps of Engineers has highlighted a couple places in the Seward Peninsula that they think would be a good candidate for, a deepwater Arctic port, kind of expanding the port facilities already at Nome, but also elsewhere on the Seward Peninsula near Port Clarence, which is right where the communities of Brevik, Mission, and Teller are. And a lot of the folks there, even today at AFN, I spoke to some folks from Mary's Igloo and Teller today. They are very concerned about what a port there in the natural deep water area would mean for those subsistence resources they rely on and an entire way of life. The dichotomy, of course, is the concern about increased Arctic shipping. People want to have some kind of robust oil spill response if and when something bad happens in the Bering Strait, the Bering Sea, the Chukchi or the Beaufort, and where will that response come from if not a deep water Arctic port? So definitely some desires at odds with each other, but the locals for the most part in Brevik and Teller, they do not seem to support any kind of deep water Arctic port there.
What about the call for jobs though in that local area? There's not much for economic development in the region. Do some people look to this as a way of maybe boosting the economy?
Absolutely. People point to Nana's Red Dog Mine as a place where, you know, a small, relatively isolated development project can bring a lot of economic opportunity. We just, at KNOM, we reported on a story about a very robust graphite mine, deposit, I should say, that could very potentially be a mine. That's very close to where that natural deep water port could be. And they're talking about one of the largest graphite mines in the world. And we're not just talking pencil lead, we're talking batteries and electronics. So how would you develop a resource like that if you don't have a port to bring those materials to market? So there's definitely a concern that if we say no to this harbor, are we saying no to a lot of economic opportunity?
You've been at the Alaska Federation of Natives gathering. It's in Anchorage this year. I heard Julie Kitka yesterday make some very strong comments about continuing fights with the state administrations, mm-hmm, over subsistence rights, over legal authority in rural Alaska. What else are you hearing about the concerns of Alaska Native people in their communities?
Well, it hasn't been as explicitly stated this year, but it goes as read. Energy, affordable, sustainable energy is always a concern. When we have people in our region paying north of 80 cents a kilowatt hour, it's just unbearable. We're lucky in Nome to have gas at just under $6 a gallon, and that's nothing compared to what you might find in Shishmaref or in Mary's Igloo or Teller, like I was saying. So energy, again, not as explicitly stated this year, but another big thing that We've seen some really interesting movement on is co-management of subsistence resources. We looked at some, at AFN last night, they looked at some successful co-management projects for whaling up in Barrow, for Eskimo, for the Eskimo Walrus Commission, for walrus, that takes place in Nome. And they're talking about moving forward with some kind of co-management pilot program along the Yukon and the Kuskokwim, and that would let tribes have direct interaction with state and federal regulators. It's something folks along the river have been calling for a long time, and to see a little bit of movement is really exciting, and it'll be very interesting to see what timeline they develop. I mean, as people said, fishing season is only 8 months away. So hard as it is to believe as we see snow out there. So,
are you hearing a lot about the ballot initiatives in your area? There's marijuana legalization and regulation is on the ballot. There's also a minimum wage and a bill that would regulate large mining projects. Are people weighing in on that there?
Yeah, we had a call-in show about ballot measure 2, the marijuana initiative. And that one, I think, we kind of came out even on, but the more I talk to folks, the more I hear some very serious concerns about it exacerbating already existing problems with substance abuse. And for every person who says, you know, it's here anyway, let's legalize it, you have a lot of people who have very serious concerns about how legal marijuana could impact kids, existing substance abuse problems. And when there's already a lack of treatment for those substance abuse issues in our region, you got a lot of people asking if we need one other substance that people have to worry about. But you know, like I said, our call-in show, people were pretty evenly split. So it'll be very interesting to see on November 4th how folks in Western Alaska vote on that.
Mm-hmm. Congressman Don Young has been a bit on the hot seat over the last few days. He was at the Wasilla High School and talked to students there and had kind of a tense interaction with some students over the issue of suicide. He kind of doubled down on that when he spoke at the Senior Center then the same day and didn't really back away from his comments that if some sort of saying that if people don't have the support of family and friends, they could commit suicide.
Right.
Today, though, he struck kind of a different tone when he was at AFN. What were his comments there?
Well, I believe it's something along the lines of him recalling from his own experience a family member who committed suicide and reflecting on how he felt in that situation and how he felt he was not there and he was not able to be that support group. In comparison to, you know, we see a lot of this, unfortunately, in our region. The folks at the Valley School had just had a student who had committed suicide. And it's one of those things where you see a lot of people working very hard to prevent something like this and to have very difficult discussions. And to hear that sentiment that that isn't enough or they're not being there, you can see why it would just really be a terrible thing to hear. But hearing what Congressman Young said today, how he's really speaking from his own experience, I think it's a different perspective on, I think, how some people took it.
He gave a little bit of context for the comments that he had given on Tuesday. Ellen, the ballot initiatives, you have been working with the legislative candidates in the Mat-Su region on the program Running that will be airing next week,
Mm-hmm.
And what are they saying about these initiatives, the marijuana legislation, minimum wage? What are you hearing?
I'm hearing on minimum wage either yes or no. A lot of people say that, yes, we should raise the minimum wage. Other candidates say it really won't help people in low-paying jobs, what we need to create are better-paying jobs, and that minimum wage will only just, minimum wage hike really won't help down the road. It will also cost jobs because many small business employers cannot afford to pay more. So that's sort of in the middle now. We'll see after the election. Marijuana, you get some very interesting answers. The Valley is pretty conservative. Most of them will say absolutely not. However, I've heard at least one candidate say, you know, regulate it, but decriminalize it. There's other ways of looking at marijuana use. It is semi-legal in Alaska as it is, and some candidates say, let's take that, work on that, and then make our own decisions, because much of the pro-marijuana platform is coming from outside the state, and it's become a big money issue rather than a health and mental health issue.
And Ed, in about 30 seconds, are there ballot initiatives that you're hearing more or less about in Southeast?
Well, I think, as other folks have said, there's a lot of discussion of the marijuana initiative. Generally, I think the candidates are more against it than for it, but some folks are for it. I haven't heard huge discussions about that during campaign events. Minimum wage, I don't really think, is a particularly big issue. The Pebble Mine Initiative, the Bristol Bay Initiative, people are looking at and comparing that to some of the transboundary mining concerns happening down here in
Okay.
the Southeast.
Thank you so much. Thanks to my guests today, Matthew Smith, Ellen Lockyer, and Ed Schoenfeld. And thanks to you for tuning in for this edition of Alaska Edition.
If you have questions or comments about the program, you can email Alaska Edition at alaskapublic.org or write us at 3877 University Drive, Anchorage, Alaska, 99508. Alaska Edition is a production of KAKM. The opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests and do not necessarily represent those of KSKA, KAKM, the licensee, or their underwriters.